Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comment sections below of my Q&A videos, or you've sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. You can send me anything you want at that email address, and maybe I'll take it up here on the show. This last week, I posted a review of Battlefield Earth because the book has been recently re-released. The Church of Scientology is trying to, you know, in their zany ways, are trying to get that book popularized again so that they can popularize L. Ron Hubbard. And, of course, they're completely delusional. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that up there just for fun. And if you guys haven't checked it out, go ahead and do so. If for those who don't know, I've been foraying into movie reviews lately, and I will be doing more of that. I think in the next day or two, you'll probably see a review come up on the new Ghostbusters movie, and more to come with that. And all of those are almost all bonus videos right now. I don't have those on a regular schedule or anything. We did not do a podcast this week, so in case you're wondering, that was purposeful. I didn't have any way to tell everybody, hey, sorry, no podcast. Just things came up and that didn't happen, but we will be back next week. So now let's go ahead and get on with your questions. Lloyd Wasson, thanks, Chris, for your channel. You were one of the first familiar faces I saw when I left Scientology, and your channel is a big help on getting and keeping my head straight after years of indoctrination. It was amazing to see my old management senior talking with a real straightforward approach to leaving Scientology. For years before I left, I proudly told my fellow Scientologists I was a flag-trained Class 4 co-audit supervisor and cramming officer. I also would explain to WOGs that I was a very knowledgeable Scientologist proudly. One of the biggest things I have had to deal with after leaving is the deflating of my ego. I still think it is my biggest weakness and struggle to keep it in check. I am sure you also have struggled with this. How do you deal with it? Also, I have suffered from depression shortly before leaving and a bit afterwards, which of course at the time I didn't admit to myself. Have you dealt with this? I also would like to say to the non-ex members that Scientologists are people and most are good people, and for some of us, this cult has ruined and destroyed our life and the lives of those closest to us. Yeah, coming out of Scientology is rough, and it's not generally appreciated just how rough it can be. I've talked on my channel here about the recovery process and things that I've had to go through to sort of educate my way out of the cult think that goes on in Scientology. And I have also in that time educated myself on a lot regarding thought reform and thought control and that sort of thing. And I mention those things because I think those are the single most important aspects of recovery. For me, has been that educational factor. You know, coming out of Scientology is one thing. Getting reacquainted to the real world is a whole nother thing, and getting used to everything. But learning what happened to you and why it happened to you and how it happened to you provides you with a lot of ability to you know, a lot of closure, a lot of ability to kind of end off on the bad things that were done and how they were done and why you fell for them. And that deflating of the ego thing is part of that, because I think for me, I certainly had, you know, ego problems or problems with self-worth and morale, or, you know, however you want to put it. Because I thought that I was stupid. I thought I was, you know, how could I have fallen for this? You know, what kind of a moron am I? That sort of thing. Yet at the same time, earlier, I'd had a very puffed up and inflated sense of self because of what Scientology's teachings tell you, you know, that we're the chosen ones, we're the special ones, we're the ones who have the inside track. This is nothing unique to Scientology. Every destructive cult does this. And I mean every destructive cult, including political and social destructive cults as well, right? You liberals and conservatives out there, and you know, various social justice warriors out there who think you have the only line into the truth. That's not the case, right? So there can be a fall. There can be this, like, you know, this puffed up ego, and then you hit the real world outside of the bubble world of Scientology, and you're like, oh my God, I didn't know all this stuff. And it hurts, and it's like there's a culture shock or real world shock or something to it, and it can be difficult to make that transition. But you know, something to keep in mind is you're you, and you are and always have been a good person, and have always had the self-worth that you have, and you know. Specifically to the person who asked this, Lloyd, I mean, we were people who knew each other when we were in, and I was his senior. You know, a lot of people, and you included, who got into Scientology did so for all the right reasons. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just because a destructive cult takes a good person or with a good purpose and twists that for its own ends doesn't mean you weren't a good person, and it doesn't mean that you didn't have a good purpose, and it doesn't mean that you're not smart, it doesn't mean you're not, you know, or intelligent or have an IQ, and it doesn't mean that you don't have an honest desire to help people and an honest desire to do good in the world. All of those things you can hold on to. There's nothing wrong with any of that, and those are the things I held on to. And fortunately, and I come back to this over and over again because it was so important to my recovery, was critical thinking, was finding out about, learning about, and utilizing critical thinking to break down, you know, what happened and why it happened. And realizing that as part of that, that you know, we were fooled, right? We were taken advantage of. And so to a degree, victimized. And that matters. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. That's not some, like, you know, oh, I just, you know, I'm being a victim. It's like, no, that actually happened in the same way that, although different, but in the same way that a, you know, robbery victim is victimized, or a person who is rape is victimized, though that's victimization. Somebody did something to you. And in Scientology and in destructive cults, it's the same process. Somebody overtly took advantage of you. And so so that puffed up ego part gets deflated. But my advice is, don't let it go too far. Don't think that because you were victimized that you're a fool or stupid, or generally, you know, that you didn't have your head in the right place, you know, or your heart in the right place, you know, that sort of thing. Okay. As far as the depression goes, I have not really suffered from a depression, I would say. I had certain PTSD symptomology that was never clinically, you know, identified as such or something. It's not like I had some diagnosis with this. It's all sort of through education that I came to realize some of this stuff. So I highly recommend now that if there is a depressed state, or if there is PTSD or something like that, that you seek some counseling from a professional who knows what they're doing. Unfortunately, there are not a lot of professional therapists and counselors and psychologists who are as familiar with destructive cults and how destructive cults work as there should be. I think this is something that they should be taught, and unfortunately it's not something that they're taught, so it tends to be rather niche. So you have to find, you have to shop around a little bit, and you have to find counselors or psychologists who have some background in it or have some familiarity with it, so you don't spend half your sessions explaining to the counselor what it's all about that you went through so that they can get up to speed. I think that's totally lame that has to be that way, but it does. But there are some good counselors out there who do know what they're doing, and they can be found, and they can be extremely helpful in the recovery process in getting through a depression or getting through PTSD or, you know, any other kind of mental problems that result from those kind of the destructive cult experience. Finite automaton. You state in your last video that religious claims, contra scientific ones, are fundamentally metaphysical and therefore unfalsifiable. More specifically, you say that because religious claims are unfalsifiable, a position stronger than agnostic atheism, I don't know with absolute certainty but have no positive evidence to accept the claim, is untenable. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on two objections to that line of reasoning. One, while I don't foreclose on the possibility that a theistic claim might be internally coherent, to date I have yet to see any such claim actually meet that standard. Far from being forced to admit that the claim might be true, if the definition of a god or gods is contradictory, how can anyone not reject the existence of such a logically impossible being? Two, even if one is met, a theistic claim that has clear implications for empirical reality can still be investigated and falsified. For example, if someone claims that omnipotent, omniscient God X wrote Scripture X, and Scripture X says that the universe contains only one planet, we would have good cause to believe that God X doesn't exist. The vast majority of theistic claims involve a God who intervenes in people's lives, often miraculously, to deliver followers from disease and other undesirable facts of life. Since, however, there is no empirical evidence that believers are healed at a rate higher than non-believers, doesn't any claim that hangs upon such specific divine properties fall apart by demonstrable scientific evidence? When we apply these two criteria, it seems to be that the number of religious beliefs left untouched is exceedingly small and clearly includes many of the people whose beliefs you pass over as merely unfalsifiable. I feel like there's some kind of contingent of people out there who are trying to catch me up or something, or catch me out on what I'm saying about metaphysical or spiritual or religious beliefs or something, and you keep poking at me, and it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of annoying. Because I don't feel like I'm actually being heard in the words that I'm saying. And I've tried to explain this a few times. So let me just be very direct. I don't like organized religion. I don't believe in organized religion. And I don't think that they have a grip or handle on spirituality or religion any more than I do or anybody else does. So I don't give those guys a pass just because they're an organized religion. I don't think that the Bible is the inspired word of God, and I don't give it a pass. I think that there's all kinds of stuff in the Bible that's falsifiable, and I would beg you to please falsify it. Have at it. It's not a problem for me, right? Because I'm not, that's not the kind of belief that I'm defending or talking about or saying is unfalsifiable. If anyone, anywhere, makes claims that can be falsified, have at it, right? In other words, disproven. And there's a lot of claims made by people in organized religion that are very easily disproven with evidence and facts from history, from science, that they're easy to show. Young Earth creationism, for example, the idea that the Earth is only 6,000 years old, is one of the most easily disproven things anywhere. And I'm not sitting here defending young earth creationism when I talk about unfalsifiable claims. It is obvious that young earth creationism is a total farce because we have so much evidence stacked up against the idea that the earth is 6,000 years old that it's not even worthy of conversation. It's such a stupid idea. So that's not the thing I'm talking about when I'm talking about unfalsifiable claims. I'm talking about a spiritual existence. I'm talking about a life beyond this body. We don't know what happens when we die. We don't know if consciousness is something that is spiritual in nature or is just a brain. We don't know. We can't be sure. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You can therefore have a freedom of belief to believe in something beyond yourself. That's having to do with life after death. Also, going backwards in history, we don't have the whole Big Bang thing nailed, and we don't know for sure where all this came from. And the idea that it just popped up spontaneously is unacceptable to me. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't make any damn sense to me. So I don't have an answer to that question, and neither does science. And because we don't have an answer to that question, and because science doesn't have an answer to that question, and is not anywhere really near an answer to that question from my knowledge and experience, I am free to believe that perhaps some force larger than ourselves created all of this. I'm free to believe that. That claim, that idea, that might be that way, is unfalsifiable. You can't prove that that's not true or that that didn't happen. And I'm free to believe that that may be a possibility. So that is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about unfalsifiable claims, is things like that. I'm not talking about things that are easy to disprove or scriptures or something. I don't follow any of that. That's why I decided to call myself an atheist, because I don't believe in any kind of God figure in the same way that any organized religion I've come across interprets it. I haven't found that yet. If I could find one, maybe I'd join that religion. But I haven't found that, because I think all these organized religions are just full of it. So, you know, I'm perfectly willing for people to, and happy for people to believe whatever they want in that regard, right? In regards to their organized religions and that sort of thing. You want to follow Christ? Go right ahead. I got no argument with it. I'm not saying you're an imbecile for doing so. I'm just saying I don't see the reason. I don't see that it's an intelligent, well-reasoned, rational belief. But I don't have to. It's your belief, not mine. So what do you care if what I think about that belief, if you're a follower of Christ or a follower of Buddha or a follower of, you know, Wuffle, you know what I mean? Who cares what I think about your belief? You shouldn't care, and because it's your belief, right? But don't start telling me that I need to live my life according to your beliefs, because that's not how things work, right? That's not freedom of religion. That's tyranny. That's something else. So that's my take on that, okay? And I really hope this clarifies that I'm not sitting here defending the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, or any of these things that I think are very easy to falsify or disprove. You know, that's why I'm calling myself an atheist. So there you go. Chris J. It is known that the number of active Scientologists is thankfully constantly decreasing. Now, in response to this, is the church squeezing its active members for more and more donations, or are they subsidizing these losses with previously gained funds? I ask, as if it's the former and pressure is being put on members to donate more and more, then surely this can only result in increasing amounts of bad feeling and disaffection towards the church, and in turn, more people leaving. It's a business model that simply does not work. Yep, you're absolutely right. It's a business model that does not work, and that is why Scientology is collapsing at a very fast rate. And that's why it's panned, you know, through any media channels you care to look at, and that's why it's the world's fastest shrinking religion, because it's a horrible business model, and it is the former. It is the thing where they are squeezing their members for more and more and more money. The church has lots and lots of money in reserves. So if they need to dole out some of that money in order to keep a local church open or something like that, that will happen. They will keep their structure in place for as long as they can. But as the years have gone on, especially into the 2000s, the number of new members coming in has been less and less and less. Now, I can't say for sure how much less and less and less, because it's purely for the last 4 years, for sure, because I don't have access to the statistics of it. When I did have access to the statistics, they were all flatlining and going down. And that had been going on for 10, 20 years. So I'm confident in my claim that it is a shrinking religion or a shrinking group. It's not even a religion. That stuff just comes out sometimes. So you have a business model where people come in, are convinced or sold on this idea of personal spiritual immortality and personal freedom. That's the carrot that's put there. They want that carrot. They strive to attain that carrot. And after enough time has passed and enough money has changed hands, they either realize that the carrot's unattainable and they leave, or they find out what's really going on at some point and they leave, or they just keep plugging away and they just won't let go of it, and they just eye on the prize, man, and they're just going to keep going, which is most of your existing Scientologists at this point. But this, yes, they are being squeezed more and more. That is causing more and more people to leave. And it is a business model that really doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. But that's what it is. Super Galactic Fiend. Chris, a question for you. I watched a YouTube book review of Dianetics, and at one point she mentions that it says the analytical mind is also called the egg sushi left, which is defined in the glossary as a made-up word with no meaning. As far as I can tell, the word doesn't appear in the original version of the book, so I guess it was pushed out as part of GAT 1 or GAT 2. So, what on earth made DM read that and say, yeah, it looks good to me, I'm not going to RPF whoever inserted that crap in there? Actually, I looked in the earlier editions before the new basic books, and it is in there. So I don't know what book version you looked at that it wasn't in there. If it, please let me know if I'm wrong about this. But the earlier version, the earlier than 2007 version that I have, does have that word in there. And all Hubbard's doing and using that word, the egg sushi lefta thing, he's saying that there's this thing called the analytical mind, and we call it the computational mind, or we call it the blah, 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 blah. All he's doing is sort of making fun of or poking at science's convention of coming up with new names for things. Hubbard liked to poke fun at science all the time in lots of different ways in order to sort of bring them down a notch, because he resented science and scientists. And he knew that what he was doing was not real science at all, and yet he liked to pretend that it was. And so he, in order to do that, one of the things he had to sell his members on, or his followers on, was that he knew more than science. And so he was always talking down about science, and he was always talking down about scientists and this sort of thing. So that's an example of this in Dianetics. And that's the only reason that that's in there. And so as far as why DM let it go, it's because it was in the book in the first place, because that's what Hubbard wrote. Nia Onelicat. As I understand it, people who have in the past been receiving psychiatric care for things like a suicide attempt are illegal to be audited and cannot move up the bridge in the body they are said to have now. What happens to those people that are in Scientology? Do they just get thrown around in lower courses with no chance to reach clear or higher OT levels? I know that some Scientologists have committed suicide believing they will return in another body. I can't help but wonder if there is some sort of pressure or suggestion from the Church of Scientology on these people to actually go through with a suicide to be able to return and go up the bridge. All right, what you're referring to is called the illegal PC, or illegal pre-clear policy, and that policy has actually changed recently. Somebody sent me a copy of the new version of that, and the restrictions and guidelines as to who is an illegal PC and why they'd be labeled that way have fallen way down. They lowered the bar quite a bit. It used to be that any extensive psychiatric history or institutional history instantly labeled a person as illegal. In other words, they cannot receive formal auditing in the Church of Scientology. Hubbard was all down on psychiatry and said that we in Scientology are not here to clean up their messes, and so, you know, they're not legal for auditing because they're too rough, they're too hard to deal with, and also, of course, he also said that psychiatry would implant people and send them in to the Church of Scientology in order to be agent saboteurs and provocateurs and mess everything up, right? Like, he actually thought that psychiatry cared enough about Scientology that they were sending plants in to mess things up. You know, if it happened, it happened once or twice, but please give me a break. It's just paranoia on Hubbard's part. So as a result of this policy, a lot of people over the years who had been prescribed Prozac or Zoloft or, you know, whatever, were deemed labeled illegal PCs, and they couldn't get auditing. And so what was suggested to them was to do Scientology training. And so they would be, sold a lot of books and a lot of training. And then they were told to do what was called a petition, where they would write up, they would do this training, they would try to be good Scientologists for a long time, and, pass out books and help out at the church and do their training and become auditors themselves and audit other people. And the idea was, if you could show that you could do that and you could be a productive, contributing, helpful member of Scientology as a, without getting auditing, but doing all this other stuff, then you could put a petition together and send it up to the high technical people in Scientology saying, hey, look, I've done this training, I'm a good person, I was on the psych drugs, or I had the institutional history, or I had the electric shock treatments, but I've done this and this and this in Scientology, which proves that I'm a really good person, so can I now get some auditing, right? Sometimes, and it was totally arbitrary, sometimes these petitions would get approved, and sometimes they would get rejected. And it was all a coin toss, really, as to what mood the high technical people were in that day as to whether the person was going to get approved or not. Money was also a factor. If you had a person who was deemed an illegal PC, but they were donating, hand over fist amounts of money, hey, suddenly they're not so illegal anymore. And a good example of this is actually Bob Duggan, who is one of the single most, in fact, I think he's the single highest donator to Scientology ever. Like, the guy's given over millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I noticed that he's been doing Scientology services. Well, he used to be an illegal PC. So, I guess money talks, right? Now, like I said, they changed that policy recently to lower the bar because, of course, in the modern world, so many people have been given psychiatric medications or psychotropic medications, even if it was prescribed by a medical doctor, that Scientology was faced with this problem of, wow, we got so many people coming in here who have had this background of this, and we can't audit any of them. So the policy just became untenable, and so they lowered the bar. And now it's not even a matter of technical review, it's a matter of OSA, the Office of Special Affairs, are the ones who determine whether a person is or isn't okay for auditing, which has made it, again, purely a political tool within Scientology's ranks. So that's how that goes. Looks like it's time for flash answers. Regina Cheesies. Do you think the church finally got to the Rathbuns? Maybe that's why they seem to be turning tail. No, I don't think that. I have no reason to think that, and I don't think that Marty Rathbun would ever, ever, ever go back to Scientology. This is not a real name. Reading Ron Miscavige's book has given me greater insight into David's mindset and how it developed. Is there much information about LRH's childhood and family life? Yes, there is. I actually talk about it a little bit in my book, Scientology A to Xenu. So you can, there's a whole chapter in about L. Ron Hubbard and his life, and you can get my book and check that out. I had to plug that, of course. But if you really want the real deal on Hubbard's childhood and a real, real tour de force biography of the man, you absolutely cannot pass up Russell Miller's Barefaced Messiah. That is the book of books on L. Ron Hubbard's life. So Russell Miller, Barefaced Messiah. Check it out. Sebastian C. I would like to know if it might be possible you get, and already have answered, questions that came directly from OSA they sent to you for the reason to get you into a trap. I hope that you get what my question is about because of my bad English. Well, I guess OSA could be asking me questions, but I really don't know how their questions would trip me up. I'm giving honest answers from my own experience and knowledge base, and that's kind of what I'm doing, so I'm not really sure how they could ask me some kind of trick questions unless I, got tricked up somehow and somehow said something I shouldn't say, but I don't think I've done that so far. Yeah, so no, I don't think that's been a problem. All right, folks, we've reached the end of another of our episodes. Thank you very much for watching. Please leave any comments, criticism, feedback, whatever questions, of course, in the comment section below, or send them to me by email. If you find my channel of use to you, if educational, informative, entertaining, which it's supposed to be all of those things, please consider throwing some love and support my way, either by using the donate button on the homepage of my channel, or consider an ongoing support of my channel through my Patreon campaign. Thank you very much, and I will see you guys next week.